Who's first here?
But he keeps wanting to upload.
Seaman, Sharon, Osmic. None of those. Oh, wait. That's Sarah happened. Sharon's here.
iTunes.
Good afternoon, everyone. We will convene this meeting. This is the Monday, April 22nd, 2013 meeting of the Transportation and Public Safety Finance Division. A quorum is present. Doesn't look like it, but it is true. Sufficient number of committee members have checked in, but we do have a number of meetings going on throughout the building. I'll be dashing in and out of the room myself. Vice Chair Kent will take over in my absence when I have to run upstairs to the Environment Division. Just like last week, we're going to be hearing a number of bonding bills. All the bills are going to be laid over for possible inclusion in a future, the capital investment bill that the Capital Investments Committee will be taking up. There's a lot of bills, so we're going to give every bill 10 minutes. We have a timer to help keep us on track, and we'll do the two-minute warning for everyone. I understand Senator Kent ran a very tight ship, so I have to follow, and I can't let her show me up, so please help me in that regard. Very good. And with that, Senator Osmic.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question. There's been some reports that the Met Council is having some issues with the light rail maintenance facility. Is it possible for us as a committee to request a copy of the report that they recently completed for our review?
Senator Osmic, absolutely so requested. I see Mr. Gordon taking a note, so we'll request the report and distribute it to
Thank
you,
you
and all the committee members. Thanks.
Sharon is first.
And so we are going to hop to number two on the agenda, Senator Sharon, 1325 Mankato Transit Facilities Improvements Phase 3.
Okay. Yep.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair and members, I'm very happy to be in front of you to present Senate File 1325 because of the 10-minute limitation. I just want to make sure that there is a colored copy of this that's been distributed. Thank you. If you refer to that, I think it will be helpful to orient you to what the project is about. And because of the tight ship that we're running, I am going to ask Senator Dibble that Mark Anderson, who directs our transit system in the city of Mankato, walk you through what the request is about.
Greetings, Mr. Anderson. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
My name is Mark Anderson. I'm the Mass Transit Superintendent for the City of Mankato.
Thank you.
This project was started about 4 years ago and is $6.9 million. Of that amount, we have $6.5 million lined up right now. Currently, our operations are divided between Lower Mankato and Upper Mankato, with the administration being located in Upper Mankato and the operations being located in Lower Mankato. Several months ago, we wrapped up a redesign study in August of 2012 and implemented that study in September of 2012. September 2012 through March of 2013, our ridership has increased 40%. Due to that, the pressure on our large buses, what you think of as a typical city bus, has increased, and which leads me to why we need to incorporate the wash facility and the fueling into one site. Currently, they're located about 2 miles apart. We're going to be building at the former MnDOT building up in Upper Mankato and would like to incorporate the wash into that facility. What that's going to do is it's going to take three separate operations, the fueling, the wash, and the queuing or the parking of the vehicle, and combine it into one operation. I can tell you as somebody that's been involved in operations for a long time, what will happen is the vehicle will come in, it will get fueled, the maintenance person will be called away, the vehicle is parked and not washed or not queued and not ready to go back out. This is a terribly important part of our operation right now. We have the large buses that come in that need to be out on route as much as possible, and they need to be out there quickly. They are full. And the sooner dispatch knows they're available and free to be used, the better off we're going to be. Additionally, the washing, the interior wash facility is much better simply because during the winter months, you don't have the residue from the street and the parking lot kicking up into the chassis and the parts, corroding the parts. It is going to extend the life of the vehicle, and it will extend the life of the vehicle. It will also improve the look of the vehicle. As soon as you take the vehicle outside, you're going to get the residue on it, and the interior wash will eliminate that.
Okay, I think they could answer questions. Senator Dibble, if there's anything that we can answer a question about, this is a large project. Much of the money has already been captured for it. We're looking for this third phase, which really integrates all of the systems together in one facility.
Right.
And I hope that you heard the 40% increase in ridership that has occurred as a result of the number of initiatives that have been occurring in Mankato. We're very excited about that.
Thank you. And Senator Sharon, I hope you are I think you are familiar with the outlines of the transportation bill.
Yes.
Which we try to do well by Greater Minnesota Transit. So, great. Excellent. Excellent presentation. Members, any questions? Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Sharon, do you know why the 40%? I mean, have you done any, can you make any speculation even? I'm just curious.
Yes, I can respond
Senator
to that,
Sharon.
But I prefer Chair Dibble if Mark Anderson can brag for himself.
Mr. Anderson.
Mm-hmm. We underwent a redesign study. It was about a 10-month study that ended August of 2012, and we had a lot of participation from the community and a lot of buy-in from the university. There were substantial changes to the routes, to the time the routes operated, and to how the university students chose to access those routes.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great. That is excellent, and it's good news. You're familiar with the Transportation Access Committee that we have at MnDOT. Hopefully mm-hmm. you participate in that, and hopefully you'll share your best practices and your findings with them.
That'd be fabulous.
Great. Questions, members? Nope. Very good. You are under your 10 minutes. That's awesome.
Does that mean
that
a better chance for
exactly.
the funding?
Absolutely. Did everyone hear that? Chair Lee, Senate File 1325 on the table for possible inclusion in the capital finance bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, members.
So now we have
Second husband's waiting. I know he had to leave.
Who?
I know Osmick had to leave soon.
Oh.
So
okay.
All right. Senator Osmick, Senate File 1539. High-intensity activated crosswalk HAWC pedestrian signal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm here to present Senate File 1539. This is for a high-intensity activated crosswalk, or commonly called HAWC pedestrian signal, for Trunk Highway 12. Trunk Highway 12 is a major arterial that services the west side of the metropolitan area and all points west. It receives a significant amount of traffic, and this HAWC crossing is important for safety of pedestrians as well as bicycles and any other type of non-motorized vehicle individuals to get across Highway 12. As many people will know, Highway 12 was bypassed around Long Lake, which has actually increased the level of traffic through that corridor. And if you look on the second page of the handout, it gives you a brief description of the HAWC system. Senator Peterson perhaps could provide additional commentary on it. This is a very new technology, a new system that Minnesota has not previously engaged, and it is something that some people would call it a little bit experimental. The lower part of your handout provides you a graphic description of the area where this HAWC crossing would go into. One thing that it isn't shown here is that there are two traffic signal lights. They are approximately a mile to a mile and a half separated, one to the south and one sort of to the northwest. And the reason for this hawk system is so that the traffic or the pedestrian traffic can properly get through that area. With me today are a member of the Maple Plain City Council, Mayor Hackbarth, to my left, and to my right, Ray McCoy, the Director of Public Safety with West Hennepin Public Safety, and City Administrator for Maple Plain, Jason Ziemer. With that, I'll turn it over to Mayor Hackbarth.
Great. Thank you, Senator Osmond. Mayor Hackbarth, welcome.
Chairman Dibble and committee, thank you for inviting us to bring our project to your attention. The regional significance of this project is that we have, as Senator Osmick said, we have the traffic coming from Minneapolis all the way out to the western part of the state. High volume traffic, truck traffic, car traffic, and we have bicyclists, we have pedestrians that are trying to get from one end of town to the other end of town, but not just our community. We have all of the cyclists that come from the Baker Park region, Three Rivers District parks, all the way to all the way to Victoria and south yet. So we have a lot of traffic that tries to get from north to south, and without a light, you're taking your hands, your life into your own hands, trying to cross Highway 12. The pedestrian crossing Highway 12 is a huge concern for our community, but the project is also a private pilot project for the region. It will demonstrate how we can effectively address pedestrian safety on roadways in the Twin Cities. And as Senator Osmick said, this is the first one in the Twin City metro area, but there are two others in outstate area which have been very, very satisfactorily received, one in St. Cloud and one in Forest Lake. So this would be the first one in the metro area, and it's greatly, greatly needed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Hackbarth.
And the second testifier, Ray McCoy, Director of Public Safety for West Hennepin.
Great. Mr. McCoy, please introduce yourself.
Ray McCoy, Director of Public Safety for West Hennepin, which covers the cities of Maple Plain and Independence. And Chair and members of the committee, I thank you for the time that you've given us to share this project and give a little bit of background and what has gone on before this. My testimony will be both from a personal and a professional standpoint. I've lived in the community for 39 years. I've raised three kids there. I've served on the local fire department for 36 years and for 30 years as a police officer. I've raised three kids. I've got four grandchildren in the city right now, and as I was raising my children, I would never let them cross Highway 12. Fast forward another 20 years. The crossing has been a public safety concern for me, and now with the increased volume of traffic from the improved infrastructure in western Hennepin County all the way from U.S. Highway 12 to the county road system, it has increased the pedestrian and bike traffic in that area. This Bud Street pedestrian crossing has become a natural pathway for pedestrians and bicyclists coming from the northern part of Hennepin County, a bike trail system to the southern part, and many of these people come through and stop at the coffee shops, stop at the different attractions and restaurants in the city of Maple Plain. With all these improvements, this pedestrian crosswalk is the lone remaining safety issue that we have in the city of Maple Plain as far as pedestrian traffic goes. I would just encourage the funding of this project from a safety standpoint, and the installation of this hawk signal at this pedestrian location would have an impact on pedestrian crossing, and it would be a long-term solution. With the installation of the hawk signal, hopefully it would reduce the potential of any pedestrian deaths in this area, and we all know, both you and myself, we don't like those kind of statistics in our communities. Thank you for letting me present from a public safety standpoint and also from a father and grandfather perspective.
Mr. Chair, that's the conclusion of our presentation. The city manager is also here to provide any answers to questions that members of the committee might have. And with respect for time, I'd certainly be willing to stand for questions at this point.
Great. Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer and Senator Peterson.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Osmak and your testifiers, I am unfamiliar with this high-intensity activated crosswalk, and since it's so new, maybe others might benefit also with how I can understand how some of these things are helpful to the pedestrians, but what is unique about this particular type of system that works so well, and how does it affect the moving of traffic?
Senator Osmak.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, I can sort of defer this one to the chief. This has to do with, it's almost a stop walk or stop light for pedestrians. It's just not a flashing yellow light. This is actually a traffic signal that stops traffic. So with that, I'll let the chief explain that.
Chief McCoy.
Chairman Dribble and committee, the Hawk system basically, as indicated, is our active pedestrian or a bicyclist activated red light. It goes to a flashing yellow and a flashing red, warning motorists that there is somebody waiting to cross in the crosswalk. And then it gives a visual signal like a typical stoplight where the pedestrian or bicyclist can cross. And then it goes back to green and just lets traffic flow through. So it's only activated upon a pedestrian or bicyclist that would wishes to cross. And I believe the other two Hawk systems, one's in St. Cloud and one in Forest Lake, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Senator. Chairman. That's helpful.
All right. Thank you. Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, I was just going to speak in favor of this system as well. I was going to describe a situation similar to what the chief did and just reassure members that it is very sensitive to drivers as well as pedestrians. Drivers do not find this installation offensive at all, and it would encourage your support. Much like the drawing that you see here in St. Cloud, our Hawk system really connects a public library with a high school, and where there's a tremendous amount of pedestrian traffic. And you can see on the map provided by this community as well, with a public library, a post office, and then a park and a community center across the highway as well, are certainly all activities where pedestrians and bicyclists are frequent often, and certainly seems appropriate to me, and would encourage members to support it moving forward, because it is a very respectful way to get pedestrians and bicyclists across the busy intersections, being respectful of the persons driving vehicles as well. So,
great. Thank you. Anything further, members? Senator Osmak, anything further? Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Carlson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Osmak, or testifiers, is this a proximity sensor-operated system?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Osmak.
Senator Carlson, no, it's a person-activated system that you would push the button. And also, you might be questioned why this is on a corner. Actually, most times you wouldn't want to put a crosswalk on a corner because of visibility, but actually the visibility is best there for that entire area, that you're able to see both directions. But yes, it is a person activated.
Senator Carlson.
Yeah. Thank you, Senator Osmak and Mr. Chair. And does this particular system have an audible warning? I'm only sensitive because I have a friend who is blind who has said that some of these, and probably not this system, that would have a particular red light time for the cars, but what she said is that when a blind person gets used to a particular timing of a stoplight, these demand signals that we're now going to, where you can't predict when a left turn arrow will come on, and others, a blind person can't really predict how to get across, especially a divided highway. So something like that included on this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, I believe the answer is yes, that there's an audible signal. This is not going to be on a corner either. It's going to be mid-block. So the only people that you're going to be activating or using this are only going to be people that are pedestrians, and there's not going to be any additional cross-traffic, left-turners, anything like that, because in that this particular area, there is no entry, there is no egress or areas that are involved. It's just a simple, straight patch of sidewalk.
Thank you. Anything further, members? All right. Senator Osmick, anything further?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We appreciate your consideration.
All right. Chair lays Senate File 1539 on the table for possible
inclusion. We do. Senator Stevens already.
Senator Champion. Senate File 360.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and
welcome
committee.
To the committee.
It's great to be here to discuss this critical project with you today. With me today is the Chair of the Hennepin County Board, Commissioner Mike Opat, and Joe Glacky from the Hennepin County Engineering and Transit Planning Division. This bonding request is for $1 million to the Metropolitan Council for the environmental analysis and project development for the Botno Transit Project. The Botno Transitway would be an extension of the existing Hiawatha Blue Line LRT and would serve North Minneapolis and the northwest suburbs. This project has had no state funding. The Hennepin County Regional Railroad Authority has been leading the planning efforts for this project. So with that, I will turn it over to Commissioner Opat for an overview of the project. Commissioner Opat.
Greetings. Welcome, Chair Opat.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Champion, and thank you, committee, for hearing us today. I am Mike Opat, Chair of the Hennepin County Board, and it's a pleasure to come before you today to talk about the Botno LRT line. I'm just going to open it up and hand it to Mr. Gladke, but a good way to do that, I do want to underscore Senator Champion's comments that there has been no state money invested in this project yet. We've done the planning on the county and the Regional Rail Authority with a very small grant from the federal government, but we've spent more than $4.5 million since 2007 to get ourselves in position to come before you and to get before the Met Council here in just about a week. On the map you see, I'll just orient you to the place. I like to Maybe I'm a little biased, but I like to say all the transit lines at some point end up at the left field foul pole at Target Field, and that's where this one begins on the inbound side. It heads then west on Highway 55 through North Minneapolis, and then we'll travel through Golden Valley near Theodore Worth Park, but not in Theodore Worth Park. I need to make that clear. And then up through the cities of Robbinsdale, Crystal and Brooklyn Park, ending at the Target Northern Campus. They're just north of 610. For many years, we've had all those cities involved. We've had a policy advisory committee, a citizens advisory committee, and a technical advisory committee, many open houses, and we came together last year to present a locally preferred alternative as well as some other alternatives and move that to the Met Council. So you can see some of the it's on the right there in terms of the stats. I never appreciate folks reading the slides to us. I usually can do that myself, so I won't do that for you today. I will turn to the next slide, though, and just I'm going to hand off to Mr. Gladke before I mention that to the left of this slide, it would go for about 20 feet is the history that leads up till now. So we have been at this for a long time. We've seen this corridor have a name change from the Northwest Corridor back before North Star was a reality, and it was in the planning stages. I remember getting a very stern lecture from Congressman Oberstar about Northwest and North Star being confusable. So we undertook to do a little research and found that Pierre Botno, this was a major trade route for him along what is County Road 81. So we changed the name of the road to Botno Boulevard, and we've changed the name of the project to the Botno LRT corridor, and that's been at least 5 years old now. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would hand off to Mr. Gladke.
Welcome, Mr. Gladke. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Joe Gladke, a manager of engineering and transit planning for Hennepin County. This slide right here shows kind of three parallel processes that at times are overlapping. Currently, we have our draft environmental impact statement that's been submitted to the Federal Transit Administration. We're waiting to address some of the comments they may have. We hope to have that document out for public review at the end of this year. In addition to that, we've done some project development. More of that will happen once we get into preliminary engineering, and we're also doing land use planning efforts around the corridor as well and around the stations. Specifically, the Met Council has their own process in place. One of the major milestones for this project is adoption into the Transportation Policy Plan. This brings to conclusion the alternatives analysis, and it really kind of gives the green light at the federal level that locally we've figured out what it is that we want to build and where we think it should go, and that we've adopted that into the transportation policy plan, and then we'll be ready to move on to the federal New Starts process. We anticipate the Met Council will take action on May 8th to adopt the locally preferred alternative as a light rail project, and we look forward to that action later on this year. Again, we hope to have the DEIS available for public review and comment. We also will be beginning the station area planning, have much more public involvement with the project, and also the application for the federal process to try and secure federal funding for the project. We hope to secure half of the overall cost as part of the federal investment in the project. And if folks are interested in following the progress of the project, we have our project website, www.botnotransitway.org. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have today.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Gladke. Questions, members? All right. Senator Campion, anything further?
Mr. Chair, just want to say we think this is a worthwhile project, and we are looking forward to getting some support from the great state of Minnesota. Thank you, and have a wonderful afternoon.
All right. Thank you. Chair lays Senate File 360 on the table for possible inclusion. Senator Westrom, I see you're here. Are you ready? All right, you have three bills, so we'll just take them all in order here.
I think he wants to do.
Or whatever order you want to take them in, Senator Westrom.
See, I don't remember the number, Mr. Chair. I'm going to the one with the Highway 29 over underpass. I thought I'd do first.
That's number 7 on the agenda, members, and that's Senate File 1413, 1413. Welcome, Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, you want me to proceed?
Yes, please proceed.
Mr. Chair, item number 7 on the agenda. This Senate file is a overpass request, but it's actually going to be an underpass, at least the latest engineering discussions. And Mr. Gordy Wagner, County Commissioner, is here to my right, and we'll give you a little background about this. But Highway 55 and Highway 29 are state highway is a state highway intersection right about in the middle of my district. But it's a two state highways that intersect, and right Highway 55 running east and west, of course, also coming into the cities, Buffalo. And Plymouth and that are on Highway 55. Many of you are also familiar with that number. But it runs north on the north side of Glenwood, east and west, basically. And Highway 29 runs north and south, Alexandria and further up to the north, Wadena. And then to the south is Glenwood and goes down to Benson and continues south down the state. But that intersection, for years, has always been a bottleneck in the region. What makes it a bottleneck is on the north side of Highway 55 by just, I don't know, maybe 100 feet, a couple hundred feet, is a railroad track. Glenwood is also a regional hub for railroads to change cars and change their loads And so it's often you find yourself at that intersection with the railroad, rail cars, and crossing the track, crossing the intersection, making it a public safety issue as well as a big time delay for anybody in the traveling public. But and so what we're proposing in Glenwood, on this north side of Glenwood is a big hill, and they say the cheaper way to go would be to make an underpass under the railroad tracks and under Highway 55, and so Highway 29 would go under these two items, the railroad tracks and Highway 55, and make that intersection easier for the traveling public as well as safer for medical emergencies and any public safety issues, where right now they'd have to go way down. East or west several miles, long ways to get over the tracks in front or behind the train. And so with that, I'll let Mr. Wagner offer you some more insight.
Welcome, Commissioner. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'm Gordy Widener, County Commissioner from Pope County, P-O-P-E.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. We have provided photos to the committee for their use, and hopefully this will make it clear. Within the past 6 weeks alone, there have been two very serious automobile accidents within 4 miles north of the Highway 2955 interchange. One accident had a fatality, and a woman is currently still recuperating in the St. Cloud Hospital as a result of the second accident. Both of these accidents required ambulances and fire trucks from Glenwood, and every time the fire trucks and ambulances leave Glenwood to head north, according to the fire chief and the ambulance director, the first thing they worry about is whether or not there's a train blocking the tracks. If there is a train stopped on the tracks, they have to go either east or west, as Senator Westrum noted, approximately 2 miles to find the alternate route, which takes them a minimum of 10 extra minutes. These are very precious minutes when we are considering automobile crashes or fires. The average daily traffic count crossing the Canadian Pacific Railroad tracks on Highway 29 is 6,700. There were 58 911 calls and 15 transfers by the ambulances crossing these same tracks in 2012. In 2011, a school bus, which was stopped on the north side of the tracks, waiting for a train to pass in broad daylight, was rear-ended by a car. Luckily, no one was seriously injured. The number of trains coming into or leaving the Glenwood Yard is 20 or more per day. These trains are also getting longer and longer. They have an average of between 100 and 120 cars. The trains coming from the west slow down to between 5 and 10 miles per hour or slower when entering the yard. If the main tracks are full, these trains must stop before Highway 29 and then start again and literally creep into the yard, thus creating delays of between 5 and 20 minutes for anyone trying to travel on Highway 29. All traffic is then completely halted with between 20 and 50 cars and trucks stalled on both sides of the track, this is. Everybody involved has their schedules altered, and heaven help anyone on the north side of the track should they become ill and require immediate medical attention. The townships on the north side of the tracks currently have a contract with the Glenwood Fire Department, but are considering changing to the Villard Fire Department because Villard, which is 9 miles from Glenwood, beats Glenwood to fires if there's a train stopped on the highway. This is because the two departments have a mutual aid agreement. Alexandria and Douglas County to our north are experiencing strong growth, with most of it coming to the south towards Glenwood. Along with less expensive real estate, Glenwood is a much prettier and friendlier city, and therefore, whether or not we become a bedroom community, these daily traffic counts are surely to rise, thus giving this project credence for today and tomorrow. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Commissioner Wagner. Senator Westrum, any additional comments before we
I don't. If the committee has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. This is a project that's long overdue, and as he mentioned, the growth that is coming from Alexandria, Glenwood is certainly a thriving business community, but also a bedroom community for the Alexandria job market. And there's a lot of those 6,700 trips that you heard him talk about. A lot of those are commuters going to work and coming home.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Westrum or Commissioner, I apologize if you mentioned this, but if you were to secure these funds, when do you think the project would start?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator, as soon as the DOT could engineer it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Additional comments or questions, members? Seeing none, we will lay Senate File 1413 over for possible inclusion in the capital finance bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Thank you.
Senator Westrom, your pleasure if you want
the,
to do...
The Rainbow Rider one we'll do next.
Okay, Rainbow Rider, Senate six? File 1199.
Is that 1199?
Yes.
Madam Chair, I'll just proceed.
Go Mr. right ahead.
Mr. Paul Gerardy, County Commissioner, is along, but also... are you the chair of the board?
I am Vice Chair of the Rainbow Rider.
Vice Chair of the Rainbow Rider Transit Board. But they also gave me a report of a lot of snow coming down back home, and so the sooner they can go, we appreciate your accommodating.
Absolutely.
This Senate file is requesting $800,000 for five transit bus garages across the Rainbow Rider system. Rainbow Rider is a regional, a rural transit system that runs throughout be mostly my district and Senator Ingebrigtsen's district and Senator Gazelka's district, I guess, up in Todd County, the Long Prairie area. There's about five or six counties that have joined together for this transit system. And so they like to have buses spread out across the district where the customer bases are and where they operate. And I'll let Mr. Gerardy briefly explain this request, but this would help them establish five new bus garages in across this transit district system that's based out of Lowry, Minnesota, which is again about the center of my district, just north west of Glenwood and straight east on or west on Highway 55 from the intersection we were just talking about 8 miles west of that intersection. And so with that, I would let Mr. Gerardy briefly describe this project and the request.
Commissioner.
Madam Welcome Chair and Senators, thank you for listening to us today. Paul Gerardy, Pope County Commissioner, Vice Chair of the Rainbow Rider Transit Board. Rainbow Rider is a joint powers board and provides transportation service to the general public within Douglas, Pope, Stevens, Grant, Todd, and Traverse counties, Monday through Friday from 6:30 a.m. to 5 p.m., and in Alexandria on Saturdays from 8 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon. All buses are handicapped accessible. There are no restrictions on income requirements to ride the bus. All service is door-to-door with assistance as requested. Passengers are using the bus to go to medical appointments, VA transportation, senior dining sites, social events, community events, shopping, employment, school, college, and other activities. Passenger fares are varied on distance traveled from $2 to $5. Rainbow Rider Transit provides safe, friendly, and dependable transportation to the citizens of the area at a reasonable price. In 2012, Rainbow Rider provided 162,699 rides and traveled 802,312 miles. The purpose would be for Rainbow Riders to plan is a locate garages in the counties of Grant, Traverse, and Stevens, and additions in Pope and Douglas counties. These garages would decrease actual miles driven and reduce hours, resulting in more resources available for service. Other benefits realized would be reflecting the collaboration of the six governmental units and strengthen economic development in the area, providing a county-owned and operated secure facility for transit's operation, providing space for future transit fleet expansion. Our current fleet is 33 buses and 2 vans. Having an accessible presence in our counties will make a significant impression for the public transit and will also position Rainbow Rider for transit in the future, for future growth in the future. Rainbow Rider's intentions is to work very closely with the county commissioners and engineers in each county to construct the garage facilities. Thank you for your time and attention, and I ask for your support.
Thank you, Commissioner. Members, any questions or comments? Senator Westrom, do you have any concluding remarks?
Madam Chair and members, just to I think it's kind of self-evident, but I mean the geographic space between these areas, Browns Valley, Wheaton, out on the west edge of the state, at least an hour from Alexandria, hour and 20 minutes, probably hour and a half from Alexandria or Glenwood. Morris being another, the college town there, being another busy hub. But, I mean, everything's 20 to 40, 50 minutes away from each other, and they connect these regional centers and sub-regional centers. And so the intent and the need to have buses spread out through the district is the most efficient way to have them rather than have drivers bring them back to a central hub every day, which currently they do have different arrangements to try to keep them housed. Morris, I understand, in Stevens County, they actually have it sitting outside. Is that right, Mr. Jardy?
They should have a garage, yes.
But it's sitting outside now.
I believe so.
The bus sits outside, so they try to accommodate and make it the most reasonable, but that's what these bus garages and the funding for them would help them secure and have distributed locations in this big geographic district.
Thank you, Senator Westrom. Questions or comments, members? Seeing none, then we will lay Senate file number 1199 over for possible inclusion in the capital finance bill. And
drive safe home.
And Senator Westrom, your next
one more, and yep. Madam Chair, we need to just get the computer running for this one, so it might just be a minute.
Absolutely, it's Senate File 1501.
Okay, go ahead.
It's better. Madam Chair, this is it item number 5 on the agenda?
Yes.
I'll do the introduction while he's getting the computer set up just to be efficient in the use of time.
We're doing great. Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair, members, some of you maybe are familiar with the concept or the acronym PRT, Personal Rapid Transit. I'll give you a little background here on this proposal and why I am interested in carrying legislation that helps promote this technology or this idea of transit. About 12 or 14 years ago when I was new in the House of Representatives, and I know that's a swear word for some people in the Senate, but Madam Chair and members, I became familiar with the group that kept coming around talking about personal rapid transit, and one primarily that stuck out was one called Taxi 2000, and one of the founders of that corporation and business and the technology was a man by the name of Ed Anderson, a professor at the University of Minnesota. And so he continued to advocate for this technology as a piece of a transit system in our transit needs in our metro area, but also the economic development potential of having this type of technology that he helped work on at the University of Minnesota be incubated and creating jobs as well as being used in our state of Minnesota. But the market could be state, nationwide, and frankly worldwide with the idea. I'm going to let Mr. Lester show you what they are working on, but the concept of personal rapid transit is an automated car much smaller than a regular transit system bus, uses a lighter guideway up in the air, needing less space and easement for application and for erecting and building inside of a urban built city or developed areas, but is as a result is less expensive to put into areas that might not be prime candidates for heavier rail or bus systems, and it gives you a car that runs and can haul up to about three people, and gives you that security, but also goes from point to point, where you get on and it goes right to your destination by getting on the guideway system, or, rather than stopping at every stop in between, which makes it more efficient in that regard. And it uses technology, a defense-type technology, to make these computer systems and automated systems run and operate. And so as the need of transit grows, and I know in the past, former Senator, now Lieutenant Governor Yvonne Pretner-Solem had been supportive and looked at this. Former Senator and Majority Leader Dean Johnson used to had bills authored like this, and Senator John Marty, when I was in the House, was the Senate author of the House bill I had. So there's been bipartisan interest across the board, and I just would like us to bring back this discussion as a possible tool, whether it's in Duluth at the campus and to downtown, whether it's in Rochester with the Mayo to downtown, or moving from campus hospital campuses to hospital campuses, moving people from hotels to the Mayo, St. Cloud from downtown to the campus, or in the metro area. It's got a variety of applications. What we're asking for is to put give the university some money to help finish testing this system, but also make that a first part of a PRT system here in Minnesota. And I have an amendment, Madam Chair, just to maybe put it in the shape the author would. I should maybe move that, and it would focus on at least 75% of the parts and gadgets and materials for the PRT to be made or bought right here in Minnesota, which is a higher number is even likely and very possible, as you'll hear from Mr. Lester. But, Madam Chair, should I move the amendment quick to get it
yes.
in shape?
Yes. Senator Westrom moves the A1 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries.
With that, Madam Chair, let me let Mr. Lester introduce himself and give you a brief presentation so we don't run out of time.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Mr. Lester, we have about 5 minutes, so... Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you, members, for having me here today. Thank you for the introduction, Senator. As the Senator spoke about, we're looking at sustainable transportation. I have a quick – oh, I'm sorry. I'm Mike Lester. I'm the CEO of Corporation Taxi 2000.
Thank you.
I'm going to show you a brief video of the technology that the Senator just described. If I can get it to click here. It's on the desktop. Sorry about that. Apparently, it's on the desktop. Is it? Here it is.
Provide the same privacy and comfort of a personal automobile. SkyWeb Express is accessible.
That'd be cool.
Riders can easily enter and exit the cars, including families, children, and people with packages or bicycles. SkyWeb Express is ready. Computer technology and location sensing hardware keep vehicles running at precisely controlled intervals, enabling a high-capacity system.
Sorry about that. The audio wasn't that great, but you saw what basically the technology is all about. And what I wanted to talk to you about today was basically the marketplace and the worldwide opportunity that's in front of us here today. When you look at this sustainable form of transportation, transportation is not only important to us here in Minnesota, but it's very important around the world. You look at what's going on with the NGOs of the world, and they're talking about investing $175 billion over the next 10 years into sustainable transportation systems around the world. You're looking at the World Bank president on January 18th saying that it is, and you have this in your handout, it's the moral obligation of the World Bank to look at sustainable transportation not only for climate change, but for helping people out of poverty. This industry then has a great economic effect if we can capitalize it on here in the state of Minnesota by using the technology to create the jobs. Also in the handouts, there's a Frost and Sullivan prediction or market study that says that the PRT industry will be a $45 billion industry by 2020. That creates a lot of jobs for here in the state of Minnesota to service that $45 billion industry. It's jobs that can be composite materials out of southern Minnesota, steel for the guideway out of the Iron Range, computer electronic components from around the state, communication technology such as Honeywell has to support this industry. This is such an important job creation and economic benefit throughout the world that, for instance, San Jose, California, is right now actively trying to attract the PRT industry to their city so that they can take advantage of these jobs. When we're looking at this bill for the University of Minnesota, it goes right along with the Center for Transportation Studies and their concept of accessibility. And they did a whole series of studies and basically said the ability for people to reach their destination that they need to reach to visit in order to meet their needs. In other words, PRT or point-to-point mass transit. I have a video here of what that difference is between, say, the linear mass transit and the current type of the type of transit we're talking about. Right now, when you get on mass transit, you go from point A to B to C to D, and then you go back. What we're talking about with PRT is being able to access a whole city. So you might get on point A, but you want to go to point Q. Well, all of those points are connected, and every trip that you have is nonstop. So you're not sitting there going to every stop or waiting for vehicles. These vehicles are there waiting for you. You tell the car you need to go to point Q, and the car takes you to point Q. I apologize for moving through this quickly, but since time is short, I want to continue to move through this presentation.
And we are down to about 30 seconds.
Well, sustainability, we're talking about going point to point and reducing, say, 1.5 billion pounds of CO2. This was a study done by Wilbur Smith, not by us. Point-to-point, sustainable, modern transit. What we've done here is we've identified the need. We know it's job creation. It can be done through the University of Minnesota. We have the specifications. We've built the control system. It's been verified by a third party. We've built a alpha or test system, and basically now where we're at is looking to build a real system and service this industry.
Thank you, Mr. Lester.
No, we didn't show the alpha. It was what you were talking about.
Madam Chair.
Senator Westrom.
If you and the committee would indulge, I think it's about a 30 or 45-second clip that would just show the a scaled-down model that they have of this that's on the computer. That would be the conclusion of our.
Yeah, I'm not. Let me look and see if it was loaded up here. The scale model. I don't see the scale model video on the computer.
Oh, I guess we didn't get it on
but
the computer.
But it's a scale model he's talking about is a scale system up at our facility in Fridley with 20 cars and 3 offline stations that operates as the real system was. It was part of what Honeywell vetted in a third-party study to verify the technology.
Okay. Thank you. Members, any questions or comments? Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Lester, there's a letter in here dated November 13th, 2008 that says that Honeywell has been working on this for the past 6 years. Can you tell me how much Honeywell has put into this in the last 13 years?
I don't know exactly how much money Honeywell had spent working with us on their own nickel. Basically, they were working with us in verifying that their communication systems that they have here are capable of communicating with 20,000 vehicles 10 times per second simultaneously for safety for these types of systems. I don't have Honeywell's internal numbers to how much they invested.
Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair, and I guess Mr. Lester, there's three numbers here, an optimistic, a conservative, and a Frost and Sullivan estimate in euros. And it appears like the smallest estimate by 2020 is about $13 billion, 9 billion euros. Isn't there anyone that's willing to put some money into this?
Mr. Lester?
Yes, actually, Senator, it's a good question. There are companies, there are cities right now actively spending money. Again, San Jose is trying to attract it. They're spending money on this. We're proposing that we would put private sector money into it. We've already spent a considerable amount of money developing this technology, and we're getting inquiries right now from around the world to evaluate it for deployment.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Lester. I guess this has more lives than a cat. I've seen this, almost the exact same presentation, 10 and 15 years ago. And it seems like everyone gets to the point where they're looking at the technology involved, the payback involved, right away needed, all of those kinds of things, and then they shut it down. And, you know, I think it's about time that we once get somebody on the outside that is interested in this somewhere between $9 billion and $81 billion, that if it's really has that kind of return, there should be people knocking at your door. And from what I understand, they haven't been knocking at the door for 15 years.
They've been knocking at the door using the exact same analysis that you've been looking at, is that they want to deploy a system. They're asking what has the involvement been in the private sector, and where right now does the, let's call it the government, stand on these things. As the report done by CH2M Hill, a world-renowned engineering firm, said, that this is not dependent right now on the technology and whether or not it works. It depends on the transit system deciding that they're going to do it.
Thank you, Mr. Lester. And we are getting on in time, so if we can move ahead, then we will lay Senate File 1501 on the table for possible future inclusion in an upcoming bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, skipping back, Senator Sieben with Senate File 1004.
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you very much for up upstairs, so thank you for your patience. Senate File 710.
Senator Sieben, can you pull the microphone up a little bit? Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, Senate File 1004 builds on the success we had here in Minnesota in 2009. If the committee members will recall, the state appropriated $26 million in bonding authority or bonding money to intercity passenger rail projects. And the bill that's before you today attempts to build on that again by asking for an additional appropriation of the same amount for implementation of capital improvements and betterments for intercity passenger rail. Just a little bit of history, because I'm sure members are curious. The $26 million in GO bonds that were appropriated in 2009 were used for a variety of purposes. Roughly $9.5 million was used for the state share of the St. Paul Union Depot, which, as members know, is now open and beautiful success. $5 million was for the Minneapolis Transportation Interchange. $1.5 million was used for the Twin Cities to Milwaukee high-speed rail study. $2 million was for the Zip Rail study between Rochester and the Twin Cities. over $4.5 million for Northern Lights from Duluth to the Twin Cities. And then there were smaller amounts, East Metro capacity environmental work that relates to the interchange, what's it called, Commissioner? Just south of Hoffman the Hoffman Yards. That's what I was trying to think of, to help improve freight capacity just south of here in St. Paul. And then there was an additional $500,000 for a metro maintenance facility, which I believe was in Anoka County, if I'm not mistaken. So the total, again, was $25 million. And this this bonding request, as I said, attempts to, or we would like to build on that. So with me to testify is Commissioner Jim McDonough from Ramsey County.
Welcome to the committee, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Jim McDonough, Ramsey County Commissioner, and I chair the Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority. I want to thank the committee for the opportunity to testify on this bill. Ramsey County has been a supporter of improvements to the rail network in the state of Minnesota. They provide a dual benefit when we invest in rail, both providing a benefit passenger rail investment, but also for our freight rail network. Senator Sieben gave you a list of where the last $26 million went in investment in the state. A lot of that money actually leveraged federal money. The $9 million for Union Depot was a part of leveraging $135 million in federal money that came in and into the state and was a part of providing over $143 million worth of jobs, in the ground, shovel-ready jobs that's occurred and invested in this state. A couple of things. When the first $26 million was approved, then Commissioner Sorrell of Minnesota Department of Transportation brought together stakeholders, the zip line people, the NLX people, the Chicago to Twin Cities people, to kind of form the Minnesota Passenger Rail group. And we've been a part of helping form the state rail plan. We've been a part of helping develop the priorities to make these investments, to ensure that there's investments that are helping advance the rail plan, ensuring that we're taking advantage of federal opportunities when they occur. We're having this conversation today about $26 million and being ready for opportunities. About 2 hours ago, Secretary LaHood just announced another $475 million in Tiger V money that's available. The window for that opportunity is April 29th to June 3rd. So states that are ready to move, not only with their matching dollars, but with their projects, are going to be able to take advantage of that. We've been successful here. We've had two successes. Union Depot brought in $35 million, and the Minneapolis Interchange has brought in 10. But to be successful, not only do we have to have projects that are shovel-ready, we have to have money that can match those federal dollars, and we have to move quickly. By supporting this $26 million, this positions the state to move forward quickly. The backbone of the state rail plan is the Chicago, the Twin Cities corridor. And we can continue to improve in that corridor at grade crossing, signalization, double tracking that will incrementally improve the service in that corridor. It will speed up the service. It will shorten the travel time for passenger service. It will make it more dependable. But it also improves the service for freight rail. 5% of the nation's freight comes through that Hoffman corridor that Senator Sieben was talking about. That's why Ramsey County has led the efforts for a study in there on how to manage that. So with that, we're very supportive of the state taking and supporting $26 million, not only to invest in projects right now throughout the state, but to be prepared for federal opportunity as they come forward.
Thank you, Commissioner. Members, any questions or comments? Senator Sieben, any concluding remarks?
Well, Madam Chair and members, I should have said earlier that the President's budget has proposed $6.6 billion for intercity rail, high-speed rail, and Amtrak service. And so this $26 million will go a long way towards the 20% match, state match, which is required to receive that 80% funding. So I hope that the committee will act favorably on the bill.
Thank you very much. And with that, Senate File 1004 will be laid on the table for possible future inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Next, Senator Coonan. Is he? There you are. Senator Coonan has Senate File 1512. Welcome to the committee. Oh, boy, we have visual aids. And before we get started, Senator Carlson would like to offer move the A1 amendment, if you would like us to do that.
Madam Chair, yes. Can we have here we go. The A1 amendment, before you the committee acts on that, I would like to have the line 1.5 through 1.8 stricken and just act on line 1.1 through 1.4.
So Senator Carlson moves the A1 amendment, the part that is 1.2 through 1.4, and then 1.8, I'm assuming, as well. Keep that in there.
Strike 1.5 through 1.8 and act on 1.4.
Strike 1.8 as well. Okay.
Yes, and then act on 1.1 through 1.4.
Okay, so everything after 1.4 is deleted.
Right.
Hang on 1 second. Forgive me. All members, so Senator Carlson moves the A1 amendment as described. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair and
Senator
Committee.
Coonan.
Senate File 1512 is a bonding request for the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Authority. It's a $10 million request to rebuild the railroad from, well, it's actually 94 miles of railroad track from Norwood Young America to Hanley Falls. The Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Authority owns this 94 miles of track, and it's made up of five counties, which are then in turn owners of the whole track. It's Carver County, Sibley County, Redwood County, Renville County, and Yellow Medicine County. And I have with me today, to my left, Mr. Mark Wagner, president of Twin City and Western, which operates the railroad for the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Authority, and then to my right, Mr. Bob Fox, who's the Renville County Commissioner and also Chair of the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Authority. And so thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator.
Madam Chair, Committee, thank you very much for hearing us. This rail line was abandoned in 1980 by the Chicago Northwestern.
Very quickly, can you please introduce yourself for the record?
Oh, Mark Wagner, president of the Twin Cities and Western and the Minnesota Prairie Line Railroads. The history of this line is that the Chicago Northwestern Railroad tried to abandon this in 1980. The rail authority was formed to save the rail line. The rail line was in deplorable shape in 1980, but 20 years later it was even worse shape. The county or the rail authority took the railroad back and partnered with MnDOT, took a loan out, partnered with the shippers, and partnered with us, the rail operator, to get it rehabilitated to a 10-mile-an-hour standard. It has operated at that standard for the last 10 years, but thanks to federal and state funding, the first 30 miles are now up to 25-mile-an-hour as of this December. Doesn't sound like much, but it really makes it competitive for the shippers in that area. Plus, it saves on all kinds of trucks in the metro area because we bring the products in by rail into the Twin Cities, and then it's interchanged to the whole North American rail network. But there are 60 miles to go. And so what this request is primarily for rail. And in front of us, what you see are the smaller rail is what's currently in, and that's 100 years old, was laid in 1909 to 1912. The larger rail is 115-pound rail, which can handle today's heavier rail freight car standards. And what it does is it makes this area of Minnesota competitive in the North American rail marketplace. The best part, though, is that this is a one-time deal. We, the rail operator, are obligated to maintain this publicly owned infrastructure to the degree in which it's been rehabilitated. So basically, the $10 million being requested will get another 20 miles of heavy rail in, which will get it closer to Redwood Falls, which is a manufacturing area that really could use modern-day rail service.
Thank you, Mr. Wagner. Commissioner?
My name is Commissioner Bob Fox from Marinville County. I also chair the Rail Authority. Madam Chair and Senators, it's our privilege to be here again. We are here to report that we have finished 34 miles on this rehab, but we are also here that we ask again for your consideration. With this money, we'll promote economic growth, opportunity, and we will add development and revitalize this rail. We have shippers. The newest shipper we have this year will be only adding 100 cars to us, but he's expanding their business from Shakopee, and they're located in Franklin, which is in my district. And it'll be a sodium chloride business. But this is what we can do if we continue to rehab this rail. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Members, any questions or comments at this point? Senator Coonan, any closing remarks or anything to add?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, this is a good economic development project, and especially important to the communities along the rail. And as Mr. Wagner pointed out, it also keeps traffic off the road, so it, you know, it's all the safety and other road wear and tear issues that follow along with that. But, Madam Chair, thank you for hearing the bill and to the committee.
Thank you, Senator Coonan. Then Senate File 1512, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion in a future capital bill. Next, Senator Clausen with Senate File 1171. Senator Clausen, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to meet and to discuss Senate File 1171. We currently have a safety issue at the intersection of County Road 42 and Highway 52 in Dakota County. And to rectify the situation, Senate File 1171 requests $25 million from the Bond Proceeds Fund for Environmental Studies, Engineering, Property Acquisition, and Reconstruction of the Interchange. And I'd like, if you would, turn your attention to a handout that you have. It's entitled, at the front page, Trunk Highway 52, 42 Interchange, Dakota County, City of Rosemont, April 22nd. And if you turn to the second page, where you'll see an overview map of that intersection, I'd just like to take a few minutes to orientate you. From the top to bottom, that's Highway 52. That's the main interchange between Minneapolis-St. Paul and Rochester. 34,500 cars travel that route daily between the Twin Cities and Rochester. From right to left on that visual is County Road 42. County Road 42 is a main east-west route in the area from western Dakota County to Hastings, and approximately 12,000 vehicles travel this route daily going from east to west. Top is north, bottom of the sheet is south, east is to the right, and west is to the left on that overview. Just a couple things about this. There are exit and entrance ramps to Highway 52 at the intersection in both north and south directions, as you can see. In addition, County Road 42 narrows from four lanes west of Highway 52, the bridge, to two lanes of traffic east of Highway 52, which presents a problem as traffic is traveling from east to west. The crash rate and severity rate at both intersections is more than double the state and metro district averages. A fatal accident occurred in 2007, while 36% of the accidents at this interchange have resulted in personal injury. There are some things that are coming together that will impact this transit area. The University of Minnesota UMOR property is less than a mile from the interchange to the west. Beginning in 2013-2014, gravel mining will begin on the UMOR property. Over 200 heavy trucks will daily enter and exit the area on County Road 42. And several of those trucks will be traveling through the County Road 42, Highway 52 intersections. The Flint Hills Refinery is a mile north of the intersection, contributing to the traffic levels in the area. The facility is expanding with an additional hiring of 500 employees in the near future. Currently, Wayne Transport has a large terminal adjacent to the intersection. Approximately 200 trucks are at that facility. Wayne Transportation specializes in tanker truck hauling and is a major transporter of petroleum products accessing the Flint Hills Refinery. And then lastly, SKB Environmental is within a mile of the intersection as well. SKB is a major innovative solid waste management and recycling facility in the metropolitan area. Over 1,700 trucks per week enter the facility, and SKB is currently looking to expand their footprint in the area, resulting in additional truck traffic. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to introduce people to my right who will offer testimony.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Nancy Schuweiler. I'm a Dakota County Commissioner for District 4, which includes the City of Rosemount and Trunk Highway 52, County Road 42 interchange area. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and to support Senate File 1171, which would authorize state bonding for the reconstruction of this interchange. As Senator Claussen introduced in his remarks, the aerial picture on slide 2 of the interchange, if you look in your handout, with Highway 52 running north and south at the top of the page and Highway 42 running left to right, you can see how narrow the roadway comes under, that Highway 42 comes under the Highway 52 bridge. There's no turn lanes. There's very poor sight lines. This has led to operational and safety issues. In particular, we've had numerous crashes at this location, including a fatal accident in 2007 and two life-altering injury accidents since that time. Even one of these types of accidents is too many. With the additional mining traffic and the growth anticipated by Rosemount, the situation will grow worse in the future as the anticipated congestion and increased use of the roadways are anticipated. This proposed project will vastly improve the safety and operation of this interchange and accommodate the planned growth in this part of Dakota County. This is the proposed interchange design, if you can look at your third slide, that has been developed cooperatively with MnDOT and the City of Rosemount. As you can see, the new interchange will be a full freeway system type interchange with ramps and loops similar to the one at I-35W and I-494 or other high volume freeway locations around the region. As you can also see by the design, it is not a typical county or city highway project. Look at slide 4. This is truly a project of statewide and regional significance. Highway 52 is designated by MnDOT as an interregional corridor connecting the Twin Cities to Rochester and important destinations like the Mayo Clinic. Only 88 miles of county highways are classified as principal arterials in the entire Twin City metro area. This is the same classification as I-94 or I-35W. Approximately 18 miles of that amount is Highway 42 within Dakota County, making this a regional principal arterial to principal arterial interchange connection. I've already touched on the freeway type design. This project comes with a price tag of $46 million, which is well above what could be addressed by county or city funding sources. Dakota County's annual state aid construction allocation is about $9 million annually for our entire 320 mile of state aid highways. And finally, this is a priority project for the 52 Freeway Partnership comprised of Dakota, Goodhue, and Olmsted counties who, working in partnership with MnDOT, are trying to improve Highway 52 to a full freeway design between the Twin Cities and Rochester. I want to thank you for this opportunity, and we'll turn testimony over to Mr. Brotzler from the City of Rosemount, who will provide a few details in addition to this project.
Welcome, Mr. Brotzler. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Andy Brotzler. I am the Director of Public Works for the City of Rosemount. I'd like to just touch on a couple of the project details. Slide 5 of your handout includes a photo of County Road 42 looking back west towards the Highway 52 interchange. I think that shows a pretty good representation of the limitations of the existing freeway overpass configuration and really prevent us from expanding County Road 42 to address the safety concerns with the interchange ramps and sight lines along County Road 42. Looking at some of the traffic on the next slide, by 2030 on County Road 42, traffic is projected to more than double, and traffic on Highway 52 is projected to increase by 45 to 65%. Senator Claussen already talked about some of the anticipated additional traffic related to the University of Minnesota property and the mining activities there. In addition to that, the University of Minnesota is proceeding with plans for the development of the Umore Park property. Current development plans for this property envision the addition of up to 12,000 residential units within the Umore Park property. This anticipated growth in the future is in addition to the anticipated 100 to 150 units per year being developed elsewhere within the city of Rosemount. The city has been working on this project with Dakota County and its partners for the past 12 years. This is a priority project for the city of Rosemount. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Brotzler. Members, any questions? Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I want to make specific endorsement of this project because this is an area that's not too far away from my home. And if you can imagine long enough ago that I was in high school, that was when there were a lot of crashes in this at this particular intersection, or at one time they did have embutments in the middle, and there were lots of deaths there. Plus, this crash that happened that's mentioned in 2007 was a 17-year-old student that was coming home from school. And if anyone wants to know a little bit more about this particular area, there on slide, I guess you could say it's slide 2, page 3, where it says frontage roadway on the mid-left side of the page, that's where former Representative Dennis Osment lives. So he knows all about this, and he has been a supporter of this getting this done for many years. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Carlson. Any other questions or comments? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Clausen, do we know why we're doing general obligation versus trunk highway bonds?
I will let my guests here respond to that question.
Chair,
Mr. Brotzler.
Members, I'll try to address that question. That's a little outside of my realm from a city perspective. But I believe the main focus of the project has been that this has not been identified in MnDOT's 10-year plan, 15-year plan. So this is a request that is coming directly to you from the city and from Dakota County that's being brought forward by Senator Claussen.
Thank you.
Thank you. With no further questions or comments, we will lay Senate File 1171 over for possible inclusion in the future capital finance bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Senator Hoffman. Senate File 648, Highway 10.
Don't you have your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Oh, wow, that's an echo in here. Sorry about that. I don't have to say, is this thing on? Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, members, thank you for hearing this bonding request. This bill specifically is for a $30 million appropriation for an additional lane in each direction along Highway 10 in Coon Rapids. There should be a nice color map for you to refer to, and as I talk, I'll point out some things there, as well as when Commissioner Schulte speaks, he'll point out some other sections too. The section of Highway 10 is a big bottleneck for traffic congestion. I know there are two people on your committee that are germane to this issue and can give you some more insight on that if you'd like to know about. But as you're aware, most of you that drive up north or Friday evenings and back on Sunday nights realize that what a bottleneck this is. And also on Highway 10, it's often one of the most congested areas talked about during the morning radio traffic updates on Monday through Friday. Myself, I was on the Anoka Hennepin School Board for 8 years, and I used to look up by the Foley Boulevard exit, and if I saw red lights before around the corner, I'd quick exit off of Foley and then take East River Road to get up and take a right on Hanson to go to the Educational Services Center that we used to have our meetings on. So it's been an issue in sight for many years. Also, the legislation, it would expand the two lanes in each direction to three lanes in each direction within a few miles between two exits. That's Hanson Boulevard and Round Lake Boulevard exit. The Round Lake Boulevard exit sits on the edge of the city of Anoka. It's a very busy exit because it's at the Riverdale Shopping Center. This Highway 10 corridor is expected to be a major area for population growth over the next decade, so the traffic congestion, as we know, will continue to get worse. We have a Senator Peterson has a Highway 10 bonding legislation that is a few miles north of the section, and that's in the city of Ramsey, which is a northwest edge of Anoka County near Elk River. The other thing, and Commissioner Schulte will explain some of the highlights, especially the version we're talking about is the green section, and then within that green section, right now it is bottlenecked from three lanes down to two lanes, which stops right there. And with me today is Anoka County Commissioner Scott Schulte, who's been a longtime city council member in Coon Rapids and is now Anoka County board member. So welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Welcome, Commissioner Schulte. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
My name is Scott Schulte. I'm an Anoka County Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Served on the Coon Rapids City Council for 12 years through a lot of these projects. That blue section you see there was completed in 2009, the third lane in both directions. It helped the safety of Highway 10 incredibly. It also moves traffic much faster. I've heard anecdotally from constituents that it shaved 20 minutes off their commute time one way just getting that two-mile stretch of road taken care of. This new stretch now that goes from Hanson out to Round Lake Boulevard will be going underneath three bridges. Well, there's four bridges in the section of Project 2 of which it'll travel underneath. Those bridges have been replaced recently, and they've all been replaced with the idea of expanding 10. So they're all built and ready to go. The highway's ready to route underneath them. The safety is one of the most important things, in my opinion, on this project. Speeding things up and eliminating bottlenecks is always critical, but the safety of Highway 10 has come under fire regularly lately with the number of fatalities in that area. You've heard a lot of different people talk about highway projects and car counts, but you'll see that 81,000 cars per day, this is a very, very heavily traveled roadway. I run an auto repair shop in town, and we refuse to go out on Highway 10 certain times a day because of the congestion and the danger. With that, I'll stand for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Questions, members? Senator Kivmar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And yes, Senator Hoffman, I'm one of those 81,000 vehicles both times, and I do appreciate that. I think whenever you have, there's a lot of pressure here. Again, you've got the railroad tracks on one side, so you just don't have much options at all. You know, some of these other places, you maybe take some of those other roads, but got the river, you got the railroad, and you got Highway 10 between, so it's uniquely pressured. So thanks so much for bringing it forward.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, thank you for letting everybody know that as Highway 10, it is quite a point. It take you 45 minutes to get from Foley up to Armstrong when it can really take you only 40 minutes to get from the outside of Anoka all the way to St. Cloud. So that's thank you for pointing that out to us. I appreciate that. Senator, Mr. Great. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Anything further, members? All right, members, we lay Senate File 648 on the table for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
All right, we'll jump to item 10, Senate File 1471, Senator Carlson. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I have Senate File 1471, which is a request for funding to acquire some property or to handle the infrastructure that takes care of the spoils that are taken from the lower Minnesota River district. As you probably know, the river is dredged by the Corps of Engineers, and when they bring the spoils or the material out from the bottom of the river, it becomes Minnesota's problem. And at this point, what we've been doing is putting it onto different parts of online storage or trying to sell it to as cover or as road material, but the supply exceeds the demand. And so what the Lower Watershed District is looking for is some kind of some location to put some of this material on the surface. As you probably know, the Lower Minnesota River is the home of Cargill, CHS, and several other shippers that are on the river and require the channel to be dredged. With me, I have Mr. Len Kramer, board member of the Lower Minnesota Minnesota River Watershed District, and he'll describe what's needed.
Greetings, Mr. Kramer. Please introduce yourself.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here. My name is Len Kramer. I represent Hennepin County on the Lower Minnesota River Watershed District. The district includes parts of five counties, Hennepin County, Carver County, Ramsey County, Dakota County, and Scott County. It's 76 square miles in size, and it extends from the Mississippi River, its junction with the Mississippi River, upstream to the city of Carver. It, unlike other water management organizations, we have an additional responsibility in addition to managing surface and groundwaters, and that's to be a local sponsor to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And as part of that responsibility, we have to furnish dredge material placement sites and manage the sites and the deposited material that's associated with the Minnesota River 9-foot navigation channel. And in the handouts, you have an aerial photo that shows the boundaries of the district and the locations of the six industries that currently use the navigation channel. The district owns and maintains a placement site for material dredged from the channel at the upstream end of this navigation channel. And the site is currently about half full. And so we have about 3 to 4 more years of capacity at this particular site. When this site is full, the estimated cost of removing that facility, if we can't find beneficial uses, is about $4 million. Costs over the years have increased significantly due primarily to development along the river channel, which has used the properties, and due to environmental regulations. In addition, the volume of material that's tributary to our navigation channel has increased significantly as runoff from upstream agricultural drainage systems has increased. There's a second illustration in the packet that is a map of the entire Minnesota River watershed. So our watershed district is 76 square miles. The Minnesota River watershed is 17,000 square miles. And the red areas shown on this map are the areas that contribute the largest amount of sediment to our navigation channel and our watershed. Currently, there's about 1 million tons a year of sediment that's tributary to the upstream end of our watershed from areas upstream. And that has, over the years, over the last 4 years, has doubled. So the cost of removing, on an annual basis, the cost of removing the 30,000 yards of material that's necessary to maintain the navigation channel is about $600,000 a year. We only have authority to generate funds necessary for that annual cost through an ad valorem tax over our entire watershed or a special assessment against benefited properties. However, the benefits of the channel extend far beyond our boundaries to the farmers and the commercial users that ship grain and other products by barge and the end users of those products throughout the state. That first illustration also shows you the commodities that are shipped on this channel. They consist of grains, aggregate, fertilizers, and other materials. There's 22 million tons on the average of material shipped on this navigation channel each year. And this is a very, very efficient method of shipping. It keeps 70 or 57 trucks off the highways. One barge can ship the equivalent of 57 trucks. The grain terminals on the river serve as an access point to foreign markets for grain producers throughout Minnesota. And because of that, the entire state of Minnesota benefits from the navigation channel. The current funding mechanisms that we have unfairly places the burden of channel maintenance on property owners in the district. And we request your support for legislation providing the financial means to maintain the Minnesota River Navigation Channel. The money that we're requesting will be used to acquire a new dredge disposal site that is being requested by the Corps of Engineers at the downstream end of the navigation channel. And it'll also be used to rehabilitate our current site and provide capital equipment for improving the material so that it can be beneficially used. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you. Questions, members? Senator Sandra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it Mr. Kramer?
Yes.
Just a question. Don't spend too much time on it. This is a transportation hearing, but I think you said that the sediment rates are like doubling. And I'm sitting here thinking, and of all of those millions and millions of dollars that we put into stream bank improvements and a lot of it on the Minnesota River, and at the same time, I hear the comments about, you know, the sediments doubling. I mean, we have put a lot of money into that river trying to stabilize, you know, stream banks and things like that, but I guess the challenge is still there. Your comment about that surprised me, and we don't need to spend a lot of time on it. This is, again, transportation, but it was a frustrating comment to hear.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, if I can comment. There was recently called the Total Suspended Solids, TMDL, that was done for the Minnesota River watershed that talks about the amount of material that's being contributed to Lake Pepin and the problems that presents. Yeah. And the mitigation measures that were identified as part of that TMDL include additional storage upstream and watersheds upstream. And so over the next 10 to 20 years, one of the things that's going to be promoted as part of that is to provide additional storage so that the amount of runoff that occurs from that watershed decreases. And so we're hoping that those mitigation measures are successful because that should, again, reduce the amount of water that's flowing in the river channel and therefore reduce the amount of riverbank scour that's occurring.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
We have put millions and millions of dollars in at it, and still the problem persists, I guess.
Yeah, Senator Sendrum, you know, we did just see a fairly thorough analysis of all of the efforts that have gone into mitigating the water quality in the Minnesota River, of course, which then has a direct impact on Lake Pepin and the Mississippi River. And the conclusion was, despite all of our efforts, Minnesota River is as bad as ever, and Lake Pepin is still filling up.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a a shallow wetland before too long. We'll be gone, but, you know, it's going to happen. All right. Anything further, members? Anything further, Senator Carlson?
I have nothing further, Mr. Chair.
All right. Members, we lay Senate File 1471 on the table for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Chair.
Kent. Gateway Corridor. Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I am here to introduce Senate File 773, which requests $1 million in bonding for the next phase in the process toward building out the Gateway Corridor Transitway, which would basically run east from Union Depot in St. Paul along 94 towards Wisconsin. This is an exciting step, as Gateway will be the first transitway this far in the development in the East Metro. And as we've all heard, there is substantial interest in getting the transitways out there to extend and balance the system that is already underway in the rest of the Twin Cities. We've had much discussion about the importance and value of investments in our transportation system. These investments support and strengthen our communities and our economy. And as I heard just about a week ago at a Woodbury Chamber of Commerce event, there is great support from the business community because they fully understand the value of connection with employees, with goods and services, and ultimately with customers. Here with me today to share more details about the project is the ideal testifier. She is Lisa Weick. She's the chair of the Washington County Board and is as well as being the chair of the Gateway Corridor Commission. Welcome, Commissioner Weick.
Welcome, you. Chair Weick. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Lisa Weick, Washington County Commissioner. I represent District 5, which is the majority of Woodbury. Woodbury Mayor Mary Stevens does send her regrets. I would like to provide a few Woodbury statistics actually on her behalf. In terms of population, Woodbury is the fifth largest suburb in the Twin Cities, and it'll be the fourth largest by 2030. Woodbury has had the fifth largest growth in employment in the region over the last 10 years. And if you combine the cities of Woodbury and Lake Elmo, and those two cities straddle Interstate 94, they will have the largest population growth of any area in the region from now until 2030. The Gateway Corridor generally follows Interstate 94 from Minneapolis through St. Paul into the eastern suburbs of the Twin Cities and is one of the most congested corridors in the region. Existing bus service, while operating near capacity, is not adequate to serve the mobility needs of the growing East Metro. More frequent and reliable service that connects key destinations is needed. Every day, more than 90,000 westbound vehicles cross the St. Croix River Bridge on Interstate 94. By the time a commuter reaches downtown St. Paul, the number of vehicles increases to 150,000. No current highway expansion is planned. It's important to note also that the Gateway Corridor is home to some of Minnesota's largest corporations and employers, including Hartford Financial, Imation, 3M, Ecolab, and Securian Financial, and also educational institutions such as Metro State University, Globe University, and Rasmussen College are also along the corridor. By developing reliable and consistent transit along a fixed route, the communities along the Gateway Corridor will be ready to meet growing demands. The corridor's population is projected to grow by 30%, adding 90,000 more people and 30,000 jobs to the corridor over the next 17 years. Transit enhancements in the Gateway Corridor are vital to ensuring regional balance and connectivity as the region builds out the transportation system. Once Central Corridor's Light Rail Green Line opens next year, we will have the opportunity to expand that system with a connection at Union Depot. I'm here to also report that during the past 2 years, the Gateway Corridor Commission has been undertaking an alternatives analysis and has narrowed the list of transit alternatives to one route and two modes. This decision is the result of an extensive study and public involvement campaign. The Gateway Corridor Commission has identified either bus rapid transit in a dedicated transit lane or light rail transit along Hudson Road from St. Paul to Woodbury as the top transit options for the Gateway Corridor. A few highlights include new consistent all-day service with a fixed guideway that will operate along with existing express service and will provide easier connections to key destinations within the corridor and throughout the region. We are ready to start the next phase in the development of the corridor, which includes the preparation of a draft environmental impact statement where a locally preferred alternative will be identified, followed by preliminary engineering work. $3 million in funding for the DEIS has already been committed by Washington County through a grant from the County's Transit Improvement Board and Ramsey County Regional Railroad Authority. No other state funding has been received so far for this project. Washington County the Gateway Commission is requesting $1 million in bonding from the state to fund the preliminary engineering work that is estimated to start next year. And this would be a down payment on the state's 10% overall share of the investment in the Gateway Corridor. I do want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you, Chair White. Questions, members? Excellent. Well, I would concur that we need to take a good, strong look at this and figure out our transit mobility needs to the east. This looks like the most promising one to bring online fairly quickly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. So the Chair will lay Senate File 773 on the table for possible inclusion.
Last bill.
All right, members, wow. I might be doing better than Vice Chair Kent did. We're coming up on our last bill, Senate File 65, Senator Wieger. Although
for the record.
I guess I can't claim full credit because she did chair part of this meeting, didn't she? Dang it. Oh, well. Maybe she sped us up a little bit while I was gone. Chair Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Senate File 65 seeks funding to complete the construction of the East Metro Public Safety Training Center. And we'd like to give it a haircut right now. I have a motion to reduce the request from $3 million down to $1.4 million. And that's being distributed, and I would move that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Wieger, that is the A1 amendment, author's amendment. See that in your packet? All in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion passes. Senator Wieger.
And Mr. Chair, this is a multi-community jurisdictional public safety training center. Several area fire departments are a part of it. There's a great linkage with the area college. Chief Lucan from Maplewood is in Maryland right now in a disaster planning program, but many of the people that have been involved in this are here. And in recognition of the time, I'd like to call first on Oakdale Fire Chief Anderson.
Chief Anderson, please introduce yourself. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for the opportunity. My name is Jeff Anderson. I'm the fire chief with the Oakdale Fire Department, and I am a member of the Public Safety Training Center Steering Committee representing the Washington County Fire Chiefs. With me also is Chief Tim Balke from Lake Johanna Fire Department, who is a representative also on the Steering Committee representing the Ramsey County Fire Chiefs. This facility, as you may or may not know, is currently under construction. Some of the construction on the site began in 2012, and the intention was to start buildings in April or spring of 2013, but obviously that hasn't arrived yet. Mm-hmm. So we are ready to move forward with some of the construction of the structures on the site this summer with the intent to have the facility open in the fall of 2013. This site is very important to the fire departments and public safety in general in the East Metro area. We currently do not have a site of this type to train in. It is becoming, on the fire department side, more and more difficult to obtain structures to do live burn training. And in the past, we would acquire old houses that are scheduled for demolition and then could conduct training in there and eventually burn the house down. But doing that in the metro area now is becoming increasingly more difficult and more expensive, and issues with smoke and the crowds that we create when you do something like that is just making that more and more difficult. So this facility would basically take the place of us having to try to get the acquired structures for that part of the training. The site also is set up. Initially, the buildings we have planned are designed around fire training. However, they have features built into them that will also allow for law enforcement and EMS to train in the same facility. And I think, as Senator Wieger mentioned briefly, we have a strong relationship with Century College in the Minsky system and getting them involved with training at this site. And with that, I'll turn it over to Ron.
Mr. Leaf, welcome.
Mr. Chair, my name is Tim Bolke. I'm the fire chief with Lake Joanna Fire Department. Our fire department protects the cities of Arden Hills, Shoreview, and North Oaks. And I'll be extremely brief. As Chief Anderson said, we're very much looking forward to this additional funding to help complete this training site. There is a significant need. There's been a need for many, many years, and this would go a long ways to allowing us to complete this site and this project and move forward with a safe training environment. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. Welcome.
Hello, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ron Leaf. I'm with Short Elliott Hendrickson. I'm the lead project manager on this project, fortunate enough to work with the fire departments and the regional agencies that are involved here. I wanted to give you a little update on what we've done to date with the initial funding, and as Chief Anderson mentioned, the construction is underway. We've extended utilities to the site. We had to get water main to the site. That was a fairly expensive endeavor just because we had to go about 3/4 of a mile to get a 12-inch water main. That's a large water main in order to supply water to the site. So that cost us a little more than we anticipated, primarily because we ran into some unanticipated poor soil conditions, so we had to do some soil correction. We also did a fair amount of contaminated soil cleanup on the site and had to correct soils in order to accommodate the future building site. So the initial round of construction, we ran into a couple of surprises during that work last year. So the amount of funding that's available for this next phase, that being the buildings and the real important training equipment, has been reduced. So that kind of supports that ongoing need. We do have plans ready for the three facilities that are in the handout in the upper left-hand corner of the handout that went around. So plans are ready for construction here, as Jeff mentioned, as soon as spring rolls around, and ready to go with the additional funding to support that. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you again for the opportunity to be here.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Leaf. Questions, members?
Senator right. Dibble.
Senator Kent.
Thank you. I just want to make a brief comment. I had the pleasure of being at the groundbreaking in the midst of the big thunderstorm last summer. And this is such a wonderful example of a partnership between so many different entities and between MnDOT and all the different fire departments and the cities involved. So this is a really great thing. And congratulations and thank you all for your hard work on this.
Thank you, Senator Wieger. I think we built one on our side of the metro. It took a long time to get our funding, but I think we finally got that done. So absolutely, we should do this on your side of town, too.
Thank you.
All right. Anything further, Senator Wieger?
No, we thank you very
much. Thank you. We'll lay Senate File 65 on the table for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Senator Wieger, you might have presented the last bill to this committee for this part of the biennium. Unless, members, something comes up, and we might have said random hearings and meetings or who knows what, but for the time being, no further meetings are scheduled for this committee. So I thank you for your diligence and hard work, and we'll see you down the road a spell on other transportation discussions and other settings. So with that, the committee is adjourned.